Good afternoon. Welcome to your Senate Interim Committee on Elections and Ethics. I'm State Senator Kate Brown. I'm chairing the committee. And on my left is Senator Lori Montes Anderson. I'm going to have her explain where we are in just a minute. I did want to let everyone know that Senator Farioli cannot join us today. He called me, and I will quote, he said he normally has the constitution of a Cocker Spaniel, but after driving over the mountains yesterday in the snowstorm, he is quite under the weather and is not able to be here. So we're going to do a couple of things this afternoon. We're going to adopt our organizational rules, which we apparently neglected to do last time we met. Then we're going to take informational testimony on fusion voting, starting off with Senator Brad Avakian. And then we're going to do a work session on a couple of bill introductions. And I will talk about those when we get to them. We should be able to conclude by 5 o'clock and get folks on the road and back home safe and sound. So, with that, Senator Montes Anderson, do you want to welcome us to your...
Yes. It's so nice to only have to go a half a mile from my home to have a committee meeting. We are in Gresham, Oregon, in this wonderful Gresham City Hall setting. I represent Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview, and I just sent out an email, and I know some of you are here because of that email, and for all of the others, please welcome. I'm very happy to have you here. It's a great district.
Thank you. All right, with that, adoption of committee rules.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the committee rules, Senate interim committee rules.
Senator Montes Anderson has moved that we adopt the draft interim committee rules proposed January 15th, 2008. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. So easy when there's two people and we agree with each other. Okay. All right. With that, we're going to open an informational meeting on the issue of fusion voting. Senator Avakian, take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Montes Anderson, and for holding the informational hearing on what I want to talk about conceptually, fusion voting, but what will be a formal bill coming shortly in the February session and in your committee before that. And I do want to just talk very briefly about the concept of fusion, the mechanics of how it works. Will be talked about by the many people that are in back of me, and I'd rather have them take the balance of the time. But we get, both in this committee and what was the Rules Committee last session, many different concepts around election reform. This one in particular is the one that I think best suits Oregon, and the reason is that it is very effective in broadening the amount of people and the types of parties that are involved in the electoral system. And I think we should do it basically for two reasons. One is this used to be the way that Oregon did elections. It's not a new concept for the way Oregon functions. And it worked very well when we had it. I think it was a mistake 100-odd years ago for Oregon to stop doing it that way. And the other is that it is very true to the principles of democracy. We have elections, they're competitive, there's always winners and losers, but we don't have a system that is supposed to be designed only to cater to the majority party or the majority parties or whatever party we assume will win because they have a majority of voters in any given district. The system we have is one that is supposed to ensure that even minority parties have a meaningful voice in elections. And fusion voting, and you'll see as folks go through the mechanics of how it works, accomplishes that better than any of the reforms that are proposed to us. It accomplishes giving minority parties a meaningful voice in the election system, and it puts the majority parties in the position of both welcoming them because of the way endorsements can work, and challenging the majority parties to give those others a voice in the election. And with that, I think I will stop and let the first panel come up to tell you how it works.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, we'll welcome the first panel, unless you have any questions of Senator Avakian. The first panel, Barbara Dudley, Richard Burke, and Sal Peralta. we'll do, given the amount of audience folks here, why don't you each present your testimony and then answer questions, if that's all right.
Chairwoman Brown and Senator Montesano, thank you for having us to Gresham here. And thank you both for holding this hearing and giving us the opportunity to testify on the bill to restore fusion voting that will be introduced soon by Senator Bakhtian. My name is Barbara Dudley. I am an adjunct professor at the Hatfield School of Government at Portland State. I'm also a partner in Bethel Heights Vineyard, which is a family farm in Polk County. And I am a member of the Working Families Group. And I am here to speak in favor of fusion voting. Fusion is a very simple electoral reform, which gives minor parties the option to cross-nominate a candidate from a major party if that candidate supports their issues. The votes on each party's line are tallied separately and then added together for that candidate's total. The way Oregon law reads now, election law reads now, it is in fact legal for two parties to nominate the same candidate as it stands today, but the candidate has to choose one or another of those nominations to appear on the ballot next to their name. What fusion, the change in the law that's proposed by this bill would do would be to allow that candidate to have both nominations appear on the ballot. The voter could then vote on either of those party lines, and those votes would be added up separately and then added together in the end for their total vote. This is an election system which exists in a number of states. It used to be legal throughout the country. It was in the 19th century, it was legal around the country, including in Oregon. Today, it's legal in seven states, and it's used actively in four states, New York, Connecticut, South Carolina, and Delaware. The latter three states have recently begun using fusion voting. Even though it has been legal all along in those states, it has been in and out of use. As you will hear from other witnesses today, it's the experience of elections officials and voters alike in those states that fusion is a fairly simple, straightforward voting method that is easily understood by the voters and not terribly burdensome to elections officials. When fusion was legal in Oregon, it provided a way for rural and urban voters to come together on issues which they shared in common, which were issues, populist issues, which affected family farmers, lumbermen, and urban wage earners alike. This era, today, in the early 2000s, we believe is a lot like that same period when we could use that same common voice, when rural and urban Oregonians need to come together to find solutions to the issues that plague the state, from land use planning to health care reform. We believe that fusion voting is a way to help to find some of those solutions by focusing during elections and after elections on coalition building. Fusion voting is not the solution to all that ails the state, but it is part of the solution. With fusion ballots, voters can focus on the issues which unite them, not on the issues which divide. Voters can vote with the party which best represents their views on issues while making a coalition with other voters in other parties to support a particular candidate. That way, the voters can make their views known and the candidates and legislators can have a more accurate view of what their constituents want and expect. The people of this state do not all fit neatly into one of the two major parties. Over 25% of them are not affiliated with either major party. Only 67% of the voting age population is registered to vote at all. While we have high voter turnout because of vote by mail, we don't do so well on voter registration. Oregon voters can be very thoughtful and certainly have many opinions. And yet, under the current system, they can only participate in the electoral process in a consequential way if they vote for a Republican or a Democrat. Most Oregonians clearly want more choices, but they don't want to throw their vote away or act as spoilers. Fusion gives them this opportunity while focusing their attention and that of the legislators whom they elect on the issues which matter most to them. Not all minor parties will exercise the option to fuse with a major party's candidate. Some will continue to run standalone candidates. But the fusion option means the possibility of compromise and coalition is available, and that option makes it more likely that compromise will be reached in the legislature. Many proposals have been considered here in Oregon and around the nation to address the questions of voter alienation, partisan division, and legislative logjams. Here in Oregon, a proposal to have a nonpartisan state legislature was promoted by some as a solution to partisan standoffs. The problem with nonpartisan elections or nonpartisan electoral systems is that the voters have very little to go by when deciding whom to vote for, and this leads to voter apathy. Party affiliations give information to the voter about the stances a candidate will take on certain issues, and fusion voting allows the voter to express their opinion on those issues through their choice of party. Voters want more options, they want to participate constructively in the political process, and they want their views and opinions to be acknowledged and taken into account. They do not want to waste their votes, they don't want to act as spoilers, and we believe fusion voting provides a responsible and constructive solution to this need. Because we were unable to arrange a phone hookup in this chamber, we're submitting written testimony from Adam Morse, who was the principal author of a comprehensive study on fusion voting done by the Brennan Center at NYU Law School. This study is also being introduced. The study speaks to all the advantages of fusion in increasing participation in the democratic process, giving voters a way to better communicate their priorities through the ballot box, and in helping legislators better represent their constituents by giving them more information about what voters want and expect. There's a lot in this study. It, I think, is a good argument for why this is a very good reform. The only objections we have heard to fusion as a potential electoral reform in the state is that it would be too costly to implement. This is a and too confusing to the voters. These are both objections that were raised by the county clerks in the 2007 session when we were discussing HB 3040. We have tried, and you will hear testimony later that speaks directly to this, to try and address those issues. We do not believe that they are, in fact, major stumbling blocks to introducing the legislation or to passing the legislation. We do not believe the costs will be anywhere near the levels that the county clerks have put forward. And we don't also believe that the voters will be confused. And you will be hearing testimony later from the county clerk in Norwalk, Connecticut, where they've just started using fusion again about that question. Certainly my experience has been, and I've been talking about fusion now for about 3 straight years, with everybody I can find who's willing to talk to me. My experience is that this is not a complicated system for people to understand. I can explain it to just about anybody in 1 minute. And they get it, and for the most part, they think it's a very good idea. So I urge you to take that approach yourselves and to help us to pass this fusion voting bill. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, Senator Mons Anderson and Margaret.
We've got to get you closer to the mic, apparently. Not that one. The lower one. Now I can't see your face.
But I thought I was going to have to eat that other microphone for a second, so that's good. Madam Chair, Senator, I'm very happy to be here today. This sort of brings it full circle for me. I remember talking to you in the 2005 session about this, and we almost got it through then, and I'm hoping maybe now's the time. It's also nice to see all my friends. It's almost like summer camp, you know, coming back together. Anyway.
Lucky for you, we'll be able to get them all together again when session actually starts.
Yeah, that's coming soon. That's true. I know that after every election, voters are hungry for something to reduce the partisanship. There's been talk about open primary. There's been talk about instant runoff voting. And I think that for people who want to provide the voters with some kind of reform, this is a good choice because it is the only choice which allows everyone additional choices but doesn't force them to do anything. If you're a political party, you have the choice to cross-nominate somebody else, but you don't have to. If you're a candidate, you can accept an additional nomination and have it printed on the ballot, but you don't have to. If you're a voter, you can send a message to someone you want to vote for by voting for them on a different party line, but you don't have to. At the same time, it allows multiple political parties to come together around good people, which discourages, or at least to some degree, can mute the partisanship which takes place, gives everyone more options, but for traditionalists, it lets them do what they've always wanted to do. No other election reform under current consideration allows this possibility. I know it's election time because every couple of years I start to get phone calls from Republicans, and my friends in the Pacific Green Party start to get phone calls from Democrats. And regularly it's like, well, we're going to be in a real close race, and we share 90% of the views on the same issues. How about not running a candidate this time? And speaking for myself, when I was executive director of the Libertarian Party, there were times when I really wanted to do it, and there were times when my rank and file wanted to do it. But the rank and file of each political party wants a ballot presence. They want to be represented on the ballot. And so under current law, endorsing another candidate was never an option because the rank and file would, you know, have me for lunch. And a lot of times the Green rank and file would have them for lunch because there would be no ballot presence. Fusion fixes that. You know, we no longer have to run a candidate just to satisfy the, you know, grassroots. If we see a major party candidate that we like, we can now talk about it. We can now say, okay, it's a possibility. Let's talk and see if we agree enough to do this. Again, it provides options, but doesn't force anybody to do anything. One of the objections that I hear from time to time is that, well, how will this affect me, you know, speaking either a Republican or a Democrat? How is it going to affect the major party? First, I would state that, you know, that shouldn't even be a consideration. Is it good public policy? It should be the first consideration. But in 2005 and in 2007, when this had come up in hearings before, there was never any evidence to ever show that, you know, fusion voting was introduced in a state and then the major party suddenly blew up. You know, it just doesn't happen. You know, there might be a race here where a Libertarian or Constitution Party member, you know, decides to endorse a Republican or even a Democrat. There might be another race where a Green or Independent Party person or Working Families Party person endorses somebody else. But in the main, there is no evidence to show that it negatively impacts either party, while at the same time providing additional options to voters, political parties, and candidates alike. You know, under fusion voting, more than one political party can unite behind good candidates while ensuring a ballot presence for each party. The grassroots of all parties will be happier, and the goals of our parties concerned are advanced since the joint voting bloc is not divided. In other words, policy is advanced over partisanship, at least one step. And you know, when we talk about getting behind good people and uniting people, we talk about how fractured the electorate is and how divided the electorate is. I think the legislature would serve its voters well to jump on anything that can bring people together without forcing them to do anything. So, you know, as somebody who has been in minor party politics since 1990, I ran for governor myself in 98. I ran, you know, the Tom Cox campaign and the Morley campaign and a bunch of others. I can tell you that organizing these ballots, fusion voting, would have been a tremendously valuable tool for us. The people I know in the Pacific Party say the same thing. Republicans and Democrats that I know that have run for office have all bemoaned the inability to be cross nominations. And I think that this really helps everyone. Doesn't hurt anybody except, you know, maybe the people who have to spend a few more hours composing the longer ballot, you know, on Photoshop or something. But in any case, if I can do anything to help, I'm happy to. I don't know what I was supposed to do with these 10 copies I was supposed to bring, but they're here if you want them, and I can bring them to you. So that's all. Thank you very much for your time.
Sal, take it away.
And thank you, Senator. Madam Chair, distinguished Senator.
name is Sal Peralta, and I'm speaking here today on behalf of the Independent Party of Oregon. The Independent Party began in response to legislation that passed in 2005 that made it more difficult to get on the ballot as an independent candidate here in Oregon. The party was formed after citizen activists collected 26,000 signatures during 2006 and was officially recognized by the Oregon Secretary of State in January 2007. Its primary mission is to provide ballot access to independent candidates and to help enfranchise Oregon's 400,000 non-affiliated and independent voters. During the last year, the Independent Party has welcomed 10,000 new members. It was the only political party to gain members in Oregon during 2007. We've attracted both civic and community leaders, including former Eugene Mayor Jim Torrey, former NEA Director John Frommeyer, Congressman Jim Weaver, and others. With that as an introduction, I'd like to congratulate this committee for giving thought to implementing a system of fusion voting here in Oregon. The Independent Party strongly endorses fusion, and as someone who is involved in the recruitment of candidates for independence, I can say unequivocally that the party would prefer to fuse with major political parties in support of independent-minded candidates rather than running the risk of spoiling the election for one or the other major political parties. We do not believe that our members, nor the voters of this state, nor our system of representative government is well served if the only role for independence is that of spoiler. Our current system, in which third-party candidates are primarily relegated to the role of spoiler, is broken. And we believe that it is contributing to the disillusionment of voters towards both the legislature and toward the two major political parties. A poll published in the Oregonian by the Oregonian in December of 2007 indicated that only 30% of Oregonians hold a favorable impression of the state legislature. That's the lowest level of voter satisfaction ever given for such a survey. A July Gallup poll commissioned by USA Today indicated that 57% of Americans do not feel well represented by either major political party. But I think underlying this is a deeper issue. People don't feel well represented by the current system, and in some ways it's easy to see why. In Oregon, fewer than 10 out of 75 legislative races during any given election cycle are actually competitive races. And given the relative lack of participation by voters during the primary season, many general election outcomes are determined by fewer than 15% of the electorate, those who choose to support the winning candidate in one partisan primary or the other. The result, we believe, is a deepening polarization of politics in Oregon. There's a hardening of positions and a campaign season that extends throughout the legislative session. We believe that this contributes to the disenfranchisement of many voters in Oregon and contributes to public apathy with regard to our political process. So let's take a look at the spoiler issue. Spoiler candidates have caused the defeat of nominees for governor twice in the last 20 years. In 1990, Al Mobley picked up nearly 13% of the vote in a three-way race for governor, helping the eventual winner, Governor Roberts, to get elected with 45% of the vote. In 2002, Tom Cox picked up 4.5% of the vote and helped Governor Kulongoski to defeat Kevin Mannix by a ratio of 49 to 46. During the 2006 election, third-party candidates were recruited to run in several contested state legislative races. In House races, there were two candidates who were Greens, four candidates from the Constitution Party, and 10 Libertarians. In total, third-party candidates were present in 16 out of the 30 races. We believe that spoilers probably played a role in about a fourth of those races. In 2004, spoiler candidates probably played a role in House Districts 32 and 35 and nearly tipped the difference in 50 and 54. In an era where we have an evenly divided House, one could make the case that the balance was tipped as a result of third-party spoiler candidates. And the traditional way that the major parties have addressed this spoiler issue has been to pass laws that make it more difficult to put spoiler candidates on the ballot, or to make it less attractive for voters to pick someone who might be a spoiler. So in 2005, the law was changed to make it more difficult for independent candidates to get on the ballot. And we passed a law saying that independent candidates could only be listed on the ballot as non-affiliated, not as independents. Fusion voting offers us a different way of moving forward. Rather than locking minor parties out of the political process, it gives them an opportunity to collaborate with the major political parties on a platform and an agenda that strengthens both sides, while encouraging candidates to reach out to minor political parties to win their nomination. Instead of recruiting spoiler candidates, Fusion creates an incentive for both groups to recruit candidates who are palatable to a broader segment of the population and encourages candidates to reach out and to win multiple nominations. Fusion also helps to differentiate candidates in the minds of voters. A Republican who represents the Constitution Party on its ballot line will be viewed differently than a Republican with a ballot line for the Libertarians or the Independents. We can see strategically that candidates can align with one or more minor parties in an attempt to broaden their appeal. This movement represents an opportunity to increase voter participation and could serve to improve voter attitudes toward both major political parties and their candidates. And finally, Fusion gives us a new tool for measuring the marketplace of ideas coming out of a campaign. The strength of showing for a minor political party, particularly an ideological one like the Libertarians or the Working Families or the Greens, can help us to better gauge the kind of mandate that a candidate is elected with. A candidate who draws 25% of his support from the Libertarian ballot line probably has a different kind of mandate than a candidate who's not on the Libertarian ballot line or who is on the ballot line for one of the other major or one of the other minor parties. In summary, the Independent Party of Oregon supports fusion voting as a vehicle to encourage collaboration between major and minor political parties, to reduce instances of spoiler campaigns, and to help increase voter participation in and satisfaction with Oregon's system of elections and Oregon's government. Thank you for holding this hearing, for taking the time to listen to my comments. With your permission, I'd like to provide additional background to the committee about here today. Thank you.
I need things simplified for me on this. And first of all, is it possible then for many of the minor parties to choose one candidate? And so on a ballot, a person could be listed four times, say the Libertarians, the Democrats, the Working Families of America, and some other party. They all are endorsing one person. Is that...
Madam Chair, Senator, that could happen, but what has to happen is, like, let's say you're running for re-election. All right, you run as a Democrat, and you get the nomination of the Working Families Party, the Libertarians, and the Independent. Mm-hmm. You need now to decide which ones, if any, you want to accept. If you say, I don't want anything but Democrat, then you only appear as a Democrat. If you say, I only want the Working Families Party, but I'm not really interested in the Libertarian or the Independents, then you're listed as a Democrat and Working Families Party. So it's kind of like what I said in my testimony. It provides you with options, but doesn't force you to do anything.
I see. And so what we need to do then, if say, I definitely agree with, say, the Constitution Party and the Democrats, heaven forbid that would ever happen. let's put that down. I would be listed as both, and then the voter, though, would only vote once. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And there's where my confusion would be, too, in getting through this. It would be very easy for someone to be voting every time one person's name listed. So tell me how that...
Okay. There's two parts to that. One is you just put a little notice right there on the ballot that says vote once, but assuming that not everybody follows directions, which I know as a teacher, the softest...
I know that as a caucus leader.
Right. the software that's currently in use in Fusion states takes two votes for the same person and counts that as one vote. If, in other words, an overvote that is a double vote for one candidate is counted as one vote for that candidate, and the piece of legislation that Senator Avakian is going to introduce says specifically that that one vote would be attributed to the major party. In other words, so if you receive the nomination of Working Families and Democrat Party, someone checked both, that would be counted as one vote for Senator Mona Sanderson on the Democrat Party line. So that software already exists. It's in use in the states that use fusion voting. It's a fairly simple thing. It's different from an overvote where somebody might vote for you and for the Republican candidate and check both then that's thrown out, because then the meaning, the intention of the voter is unknown. But the intention of the voter, if they vote twice for you, is easily ascertained.
Thank you. And just one more follow-up. Regarding the cost, so this software would need to be implemented in all of our voting stations, or, you know,
yes.
And is that a lot of money? I know some. You had said that some people said it was very, very costly, but you say the software already is developed.
This is the, to date myself, $64,000 question. I guess that's probably about $64 trillion today. But it is our understanding that because that software exists and is in use by both of the two software voting software vendors who service Oregon counties, that it would be a fairly easy matter for them to patch that in. I think that the contest about what would it cost is whether or not the Secretary of State decides that because of that patch, the certification, the state certification of the software has to be repeated or renewed. And so then they would have to pay to have the certification done. I think that's a different question, and it's a question that I think the Secretary of State has to answer. And we haven't gotten that answer yet. But there are other people far more knowledgeable about software than I who are going to testify later.
A couple other questions. One of you, or all three of you who wish to respond, talk to me about why you think Fusion is better than other solutions out there, for example, like instant runoff voting.
I have a couple of answers to that. One is, I think Fusion is much simpler for the clerks and the voters to understand and for the software vendors to implement. So in some ways, it's just straightforward. It's much cheaper. Because all it involves doing is adding two lines together after everything has been counted up, whereas instant runoff is a whole different, you know, system of folding over from your first choice to your second choice to your third choice. But there's a policy reason why I think it's better as well, which is that I think that fusion voting encourages coalitions around issues. It encourages people, voters and candidates, to focus on issues and try to find ways to come together around those issues and to listen to people of slightly different points of view in order to build their coalitions. Whereas instant runoff is really just a rollover of you be my first choice, you be my second choice, and you're the one I don't like at all. To me, it just makes a lot more sense if what our problem is reaching some kind of consensus on how to resolve issues. This seems more likely to bring that about.
Yes, thank you. I have a soft spot in my heart for instant runoff voting, but in reality, I don't think it's politically possible in the near future, and I think that our people, the citizens, would like to see something done now. IRV, it's in San Francisco and a few localities, but I think it's way down the horizon for partisan races like this. Open primaries sort of steal away or dilute the identity of political parties, and also it makes it hard for a political party to express their voice, and what you get in the general election is very different. The top two system, which is incorrectly called the open primary, which has been proposed, that changes everything because it changes voting behavior in the primary, and of course it eliminates voices in the general election when people are actually paying attention to what's being said that aren't partisan. So there's a big distortion, a big demand and change in voter behavior and options with the top two system. The same is true, and party voices are diluted in the open primary. IRV, I think, is like, a spaceship that goes to the stars way down the horizon. And fusion voting is the only option which allows for people to come together without requiring that individual voters, candidates, or parties change what they do. Most of them will, but it is the gentlest and, I think, most effective way for people to come together.
I agree with most of the comments that you made. I
will say that the Independent Party supports IRB at the local level for the reasons you stated, that it just seems that we're so far away from that point at the state level. I'm not convinced that instant runoff voting would be preferable for fusion in any case, but be that as it may, I'm not one of the perfect standing in there to go, and right now we can do something very positive for elections here.
So talk to me about the impact of fusion voting for the non-affiliated voters of the state.
Well, I think the point of fusion voting is precisely to bring the non-affiliated voters back into the feeling that they belong in this system. There are a whole lot of people, and you'll be hearing from a couple of young people later about how this is particularly true for younger voters, but it's true across the board, across the ages, that people are feeling very cynical about the major parties. They, for good reason or bad, they see them as not standing for anything in particular. They see them as battling all the time, really just for political power. And whether that's fair or not is not for me to judge, but I can tell you, and you know as well as I do, that it's the fact. So the question is, how do you bring those people back into what we call in academia civic engagement? And the answer, I believe, is giving them some way to express their opinion on the issues they really care about without relegating them to the role of spoiler or wasted vote, which is even worse than spoiler. I mean, in some ways, I think some people get some cynical pleasure out of being a spoiler. But I think that the wasted vote issue is more to the point. So I think what it does is it allows someone to say, yes, I would like to vote for that candidate, but I want that candidate to know that I believe strongly that these are the two priorities that I want accomplished by this legislature. It also, I think, will get us away from people trying always to second-guess the legislature through the ballot initiative process, which is beginning to drive me crazy. I don't know about you. And I think that what we need to do is to allow people to trust that the legislative work of the state can be done through the legislature, but it can be done with the advice and consent of the electorate. And in some ways, that's what fusion voting makes possible.
Two other questions. I have received, this might scare some of you, but in running for the state Senate, I have traditionally received both the Democratic and Republican nominations. Clearly, when the ballot comes, I appear as a Democrat. Under fusion voting, would I be able to receive the nomination of both of those parties and have that on my ballot?
I think that would be an excellent idea, but given the way that the party rules read right now, no. So you all would have to change your party rules. That's why the way this reads right now, it allows a minor party to cross-nominate a major party candidate. But if I was running on the Working Families Party ticket, the Democratic Party couldn't cross-nominate me. But that's your own internal problem.
So one of the pushbacks I get about, one of the reasons why folks tell me they like the open primary system, and I have some of the same concerns that the three of you very articulately stated, is that it moves people toward the center, to the moderates. And do you see fusion voting doing that in any way?
I do very much. I think that what you're going to see if we go to the top two system, which is incorrectly called an open primary, what I think you'll see is the supporters of the first place finisher, you know, will be obliged to vote. The supporters of the second place finisher will be obliged to vote. But all of the other people, they're out, and they have to choose, okay, well, what's the lesser of two evils? I have no way to express myself truly, or else get on the bandwagon behind one of them. That's their choices. That's it. And that does nothing, I believe, to bring them in, to create enthusiasm about the democratic process, to get them excited about it. You know, if you have a fusion voting system, and you might have the same people end up on the ballot, but there are multiple ways to express yourself. And you can decide what kind of a message you can send, how you want to send that message. You know, if I want to vote for, Joe Blow, who's running as a Democrat, and I want to send him a signal that
you know, that some issue is important to me or I'm not crazy about them, but I'll vote for them because I don't like the other person, I'll vote on the other line. You know, but there's at least a way for people to be creative in their involvement and make it interesting to be involved rather than say, okay, you know, my views aren't totally in conjunction with the top two, so I'm just going to, you know, vote in the primary. Well, then I'm done. So I think in that way, fusion is highly superior and preferable to the top two system.
Can I answer that a slightly different way? I think your question was, do we think this will bring people toward the center in the way that they allege that a top two so-called open primary would? I think it depends on how you identify the center. Thank you. One of the things that we have found in our polling with the Working Families Party is that in the modern era, left and right are defined by the so-called wedge issues, the social issues, the cultural issues, whatever you want to call them. The center, there's a whole lot of agreement in the center on economic issues. So if you want to bring people to that center, which I believe is the true work of government, yes, I think that fusion voting will very much do that. But, you know, whether or not you focus on those issues, I think depends on what your party is interested in doing. And I think that people tend to vote today on the more exotic issues that pull them apart. And by that I mean things like civil unions. And that's the only issue that is talked about by the media or by the candidates, whereas the issue that would bring people together, people on both sides of the civil union question, the issues that would bring them together would be the economic issues. So can we, with fusion voting, start to bring people together on those issues? I think so. And I don't think they're necessarily ever going to agree on civil unions, but we could at least get some of the economic work done.
Just another scenario. If, say, the Independent Party had a candidate in the primary, is that even possible to have a candidate?
The Independent Party and all minor parties have their own nominating processes.
After the primary?
Well, either before or after the primary, but they have their own nominating processes that are separate from our primary system, which is only available to
them. And then a further question then. Say you... If we do adopt fusion voting, then I would think then the minor parties would want to wait until after the primary to see what
absolutely
they have. Okay.
Yes.
I would like to add to that first point is that minor parties can have any number of nominating conventions they wish, as long as they're held in accordance with their rules. So we could hold a nominating convention next week, and I could be nominated for state representative. But then someone that I really like is nominated as a Republican or Democrat, I can withdraw. And then in a subsequent nominating convention, we can fuse.
Sounds complicated. It doesn't have to be that complicated. Richard gets into the details here.
But that's helpful.
That's good. All right. Thank you very much. Really appreciated the information. And look forward to hearing from you again in February. Next up, I'd like to bring up Andy Garfunkel. And you truly are from Connecticut. Thank you for joining us. Ashley Albies, come on up. And Jake Oliver. And for the first panel, if you have written testimony, we make sure that Marjorie got a copy of it, or at least 10 copies of it. Why don't you go ahead and get started? Thanks. And it's the low, short mic. Just think me, short and to the ground.
No problem. I'm right on your level.
So.
I was told that it was always cloudy and rainy here in Oregon, and I guess I brought the sun with me. I'm happy that I could bring something to you folks. Honored to be here, Madam Chairman, Senator. I am here at the request of the Oregon Ballot Freedom Project to share my experience of the cross endorsements, or as you call it, fusion voting. As town clerk of Norwalk, Connecticut, which is the sixth largest city in the state of Connecticut with a population of near 85,000 people, we have 45,000 registered voters on record. I have overseen several elections in the past 6 years, which candidates were cross-endorsed by multiple parties. For several years in Norwalk, we have had an active independent party, which frequently cross-endorsed major party candidates, both Democrats and Republicans. More recently, the Working Families Party has cross-endorsed several Democratic candidates for state and local offices. Both the Independent Party and the Working Families Party also have run their own candidates for municipal offices at the same time. In fact, this year, the Connecticut General Assembly enacted new legislation that expands the opportunities for minor parties to cross-endorse their candidates. As a result, this new law, during the 2007 municipal election, there were 13 cross-endorsed candidates for local offices compared to just one cross-endorsement in 2005. The sharp increase in the number of cross-endorsed candidates did not have any measurable impact in terms of the cost or staff hours required to hold this election. Because Connecticut law also requires minor parties to collect nominating petition signatures for most cross-endorsements, there was an increase in the number of nominating petitions that our office was required to verify this year. However, minor parties are required to gather nomination petitions when they run on a separate candidate as well. So the increase in petition signatures have occurred when whether the minor party cross-endorses a candidate or runs its own candidate. Importantly, Connecticut also recently changed from lever voting machines to the optical scan voting machines. Our voting machines are programmed to recognize the double votes or an overvote to ensure every vote is counted and no vote is counted twice. On the occasion when a voter does cast a double vote for a candidate running in more than one nomination, our voting machines record the vote as a single vote for the candidate, as the voter's intent is clear in such a case. No votes are disqualified or lost. By Connecticut statute, that one vote is attributed to the minor party line. And that is to keep the minor parties active in the state. And that is how they rule that. This double vote occasionally occurs on paper absentee ballots as well, which may be especially relevant to you here in Oregon with the vote-by-mail system. Of course, we run these absentee ballots through our optical scan machines, and the machines are, again, able to accurately and seamlessly count the votes as a single vote for that candidate. In Connecticut, there are certain legal requirements concerning the design of our ballot, and it is one of the jobs of the town clerks to ensure that these requirements are met. Cross-endorsed candidates must appear on the ballot in a manner consistent with these statutes. This is a minor technicality, to be sure, and one that may not even be relevant to the state that uses a different ballot design than we do in Connecticut. In summary, having had responsibility for administrating elections in the town of Norwalk and the city of Norwalk for the past 6 years, I have seen the ebb and flow in the use of cross-endorsements in the local and state elections. There is little to no added burden in the terms of election administration when the parties use the cross-endorsement. Certainly, our office has not been required to add staff or spend additional resources as a result of these cross-endorsements. I hope this provides at least a little real-world experience on the technical side and allows the fusion system, in allowing the fusion system. I'm confident that my counterparts in Oregon will not find it burdensome to institute this relatively modest change in the electoral process. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for holding this hearing and providing an opportunity to testify on the effort to restore fusion here in Oregon. My name is Ashley Albies, and I sit on the board of the Ballot Freedom Project, which is an Oregon nonprofit dedicated to educating Oregonians as to why fusion voting is a means to make our democracy more effective. I'm involved with the Ballot Freedom Project because I'm also a member of a generation of voters who feel alienated from the political process. Fusion, I believe, offers our best hope to engage the next generation of voting citizens. Oregon has the country's largest gap between voter participation rates of young versus older voters. Voter registration organizers identify many reasons for this problem. Campaigns and candidates ignore young voters precisely because of their lack of turnout, lack of education about the political process, a fundamental disconnect from partisanship, and a distrust of the system.
It's also true that the vote-by-mail system, while increasing turnout for older, more established voters, tends to disenfranchise younger voters who move and change addresses more frequently. All these reasons wind up with the same result. Young voters feel disengaged and alienated from the political process and have a sense that their voices just don't count. Fusion provides one solution to this problem by increasing the choices available to voters. Mine is a generation that is used to a multitude of choices at every level of society, from what type of vanilla Coke to drink to which social networking site we should use the most. And it's also a generation that communicates through messaging. Fusion allows voters to send a message with their vote, signaling to candidates which issues mean the most. And Fusion gives us the option of voting for a candidate with an actual chance of winning. We can dramatically increase our voting effectiveness by eliminating the problem of a spoiler vote. And as somebody who personally does not belong to either of the major problems at parties, sorry, Freudian slip there.
Minor faux pas. Awesome.
I meant major parties. I cannot stress this last point enough.
We're going to laugh about that one for a long time.
Well, we certainly want more voters exercising their right to vote. We want them to do so because they feel it makes a difference. Survey data from Fusion Legal States demonstrates that Fusion-based parties appeal to young voters with irregular voting behavior and limited partisan identification. Fusion provides the opportunity for disengaged youth to get involved in the political process in a constructive and creative fashion, to cast votes that reflect their priorities while supporting a candidate with a chance of winning. So for these reasons, Fusion provides a chance to engage young voters and to help them realize that their voices and their votes really do count. Thank you.
Jake.
Madam Chairman, Madam Senator, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak to the community today about the effort to restore Fusion voting in Oregon. My name is Jake Oliver. I'm a recent college graduate, a former organizer with the Working Families Party in New York and Connecticut. I'm thankful to be here, not only speaking about why Fusion voting has been important to me and my development as a political organizer, but also to my generation, a generation of young, politically active folks, and also our peers who feel alienated from the process. Fusion voting is precisely the reason I'm involved in the process today. As a college sophomore, I felt alienated from politics. It was at this time that I took a job with the Working Families Party in Brooklyn, in New York, for the summer. It appealed to me because it allowed me a choice that reflected my values as a civic participant. We need young voters to be involved in the process. Our generation is going to be charged with the task of solving extraordinary problems, from global warming to ending poverty to saving Social Security and Medicare. We're not going to be able to do this with an uneducated, unmotivated, and apathetic population. According to the University of Maryland study, Oregon has the largest gap of participation rates between younger and older voters. Fusion voting is an excellent way to engage young people in the process. It allows them to mail in a ballot that truly reflects their values. It gives them a greater degree of choice and allows them to send a message to major candidates and political parties without playing the role of spoiler. Most of all, it gives them a voice and lets them know that someone in the political arena is fighting for the issues and values that they feel matter the most. For these reasons, I feel that Fusion provides us with the best opportunity to engage the next generation of voters. And I've seen this on college campuses as I've organized in Connecticut and New York. It would be great to bring that here to Oregon, and I want to thank you for allowing me to speak today.
Andy, just a question for you on a sort of side-related topic, and that is Oregon's vote by mail. Folks ask me all the time, why aren't more states moving to vote by mail? We have a paper trail in terms of computer counting. I'm just curious, from your perspective, do you see in your state you guys moving to vote by mail at any time?
It is not anything that has been in discussion recently, although in the last year we did change from the lever voting machines to the optical scan statewide. In this past 2007 election, it was a complete statewide changeover. We do have paper ballots. They do go to the actual voting polling station and cast a ballot in paper there. It was read by the optical scan, and it is also, we did have two recanvass election
recounts
from following canvas. There were two recounts and actually opening the back of the machine and pulling out the ballots and then hand counting them again determines whether there was any kind of difference between those. And that was the reason that the state of Connecticut did go with those machines or that actual brand, is the fact that we do retain the actual paper ballots. We have been traditionally using paper ballots for absentee. So we have been doing the same process for over the years, for decades.
Do you see your absentee voting increasing at all? Do you see that happening?
It always is increasing, yes. And actually, there's legislation to open it up to even more than the 5 reasons that you're allowed to absentee vote.
Oh, okay. All right. My other question for Jake and Ashley, I'm assuming that fusion voting doesn't solve the entire problem about engaging young voters. The two of you, or Andy, if you have any suggestions, about how we can engage young voters, other processes we might use.
You take this
one. I'm a big fan of same-day voter registration. I especially feel like the vote-by-mail system disenfranchises young people because we move a lot. I don't know where I'll be living in 6 months, but I'd like to be able to not have to worry about sending in a ballot all the time. Also heard about automatic voter registration for college students is another option that's been discussed.
I would add just a short thing. You know, I think it's increasing participation, increasing civil engagement, is increasing education at an early age about how young people fit in the political process and that they do have a voice and that their votes do count. So I think starting at a younger age in schools, increasing that education about what our role is and what level of civic engagement we can, how we can effectively participate and what that participation means. So that's a very broad answer, but I think it starts with a lot of education at a very basic level.
I'm just honored that you put me into the young voters, that I'm allowed to even field this question. I have no comment, but
you have any bright ideas. Okay.
I have 2 children of my own who are voting here, so.
That's great. Do they vote?
Yes, they do. Okay. That's how I won. So, 2 extra votes.
I'll have to remember that.
Get their friends out.
Thank you, three of you, for joining us today. All right. Last but not least, Claire Crawford. And Mr. Crawford, you sure you don't want to come up? Okay. All right. That's what I thought you wanted company.
First, thank you. To the Elections and Ethics Committee members for holding this hearing. My name is Claire Crawford, and I'm the director of the National Open Ballot Project, which is a nonpartisan research organization that favors the revival of the fusion voting system. Recently, several state legislatures have considered bills to revive fusion voting. In order to provide relevant research and information to state legislators, the National Open Ballot Project commissioned a study that addresses the technical and cost considerations of fusion voting in Maine and Oregon. My testimony will focus on these aspects of the proposed legislation. Before I talk about the study, I just want to quickly thank John Lindbeck and the Oregon Secretary of State's office, as well as Sherry Hall, Annette Newingham, and John Kaufman, who are the county clerks of Clackamas Lane and Multnomah counties, respectively, for sharing their expertise and views on the implications of the revival of fusion voting in Oregon for this study. So in order to produce a study that would be of most use to states considering reinstating fusion voting, we began our research first conducting extensive interviews with elections officials in both Maine and Oregon. Their views and questions on the potential costs, needs, and challenges of implementing the reform determined the rest of the research and information gathering that followed. We looked for answers to the questions posed by these elections officials through interviews and data collection from the experience of 4 fusion legal states, Connecticut, Delaware, New York, and South Carolina. We then gathered additional information directly from the state elections officials, software and technology vendors, and through examination of elections regulations throughout the country. The major findings of our study are that implementation of fusion voting would not be substantially difficult to administer, which you obviously heard testimony already about, that fusion voting does not cause significant voter confusion, that fusion voting does not impact the number of parties that qualify for ballot status, so it does not cause an increase in quote-unquote ballot clutter, and that implementation of fusion voting should not be prohibitively expensive. So fusion voting would not be substantially difficult to administer. In New York, fusion voting is common in most elections. In Delaware, fusion voting made its first appearance recently, despite being on the books for all of Delaware's voting history. In Connecticut and South Carolina, fusion has seen periods of use and disuse. In all four states, elections officials unanimously agreed that elections in which minor parties are active and nominate fusion candidates are neither more difficult nor more time-consuming to administer than elections in which fusion is not used. As you've already heard through the testimony of Norwalk, Connecticut County Clerk Andy Garfunkel, fusion voting has not caused any difficulties or additional burdens locally in administering their elections. One of the major concerns expressed by elections officials in Oregon and Maine is the requirement of dealing with double votes, which Mr. Garfunkel, I believe, testified pretty clearly that there's already technology available that can count those without any additional staffing required. Fusion voting also does not cause significant voter confusion. Clearly, there would be some level of confusion the first year out, since it would be something completely new. But we interviewed elections officials with real practical experience administering fusion elections, and their experience with voters who voted in person with various types of different voting systems, including paper ballots, as well as citizens who voted by mail via absentee ballot. Officials from each of the four states reported to us that the level of voter confusion has been little to none. This was evidenced both by the lack of confusion and questions expressed by voters, as well as by the low numbers of double votes that were cast. Fusion voting would also not lead to a cluttered ballot. Another concern that was raised by elections officials in both Maine and Oregon was the issue of a cluttered ballot, or rather a dramatic increase in the length of the ballot due to a surge in new minor parties qualifying and nominating candidates. Our principal finding was that fusion did not appear to have any bearing on the number of parties that were actually qualified to appear on a ballot. For example, Oregon currently has 7 qualified parties, whereas New York currently only has 5. Looking at states in the West, California has 6, and Washington only has 2 qualified parties. Florida has by far the most qualified parties, ranging from 20 to 25. That is because all you need to do in Florida to be a qualified party is send in a letter and say, these are our leaders, please place on the ballot. None of those three states, Washington, California, and Florida, permit fusion. The number of parties qualified is determined not by the legality of fusion voting, but rather by the state's requirements to gain ballot access. The bill being considered by the Oregon legislature does not alter Oregon's ballot access requirements and therefore should have no impact. Among the longer ballots in the country is California's, in large part due to the ballot initiative process. Ballot initiatives are a far more significant factor in the length of the actual ballot than minor party candidate nominations. Finally, implementation of fusion voting should not prove to be prohibitively costly. There are 3 potential costs that have been raised with the implementation of fusion voting: software development and programming, software certification, and voter education. Our findings indicate that the cost for Oregon to implement the current proposal should be expected to be low. Attached to our study are letters from Ed Smith, the vice president of Sequoia Voting Systems, one of Oregon's 2 voting technology vendors. According to Smith, software has already been developed for use with fusion voting and is in use in New York. He specifically states in one of his letters that new software would not need to be developed for Oregon and that costs would likely be limited to labor, which he characterized as minimal. Also attached to our study is a letter from Douglas Kellner of the New York State Board of Elections indicating that all major software vendors, including ES&S and Sequoia, Oregon's only 2 vendors, have software developed for use with fusion voting. Conversations with ES&S confirm this. So while vendors have been unable to give specific dollar figures, information they have provided indicates that technology costs for implementing fusion voting should be exceedingly low. The only additional software cost indicated was the possibility of state recertification. In Oregon, the Secretary of State's office makes the final determination on the necessity of software recertification. While requirements on certification vary from state to state, information from other states and from vendors indicate that the software changes are likely minimal enough as to not warrant recertification. In his memo of January 15, 2008, Mr. Smith of Sequoia Voting Systems refers to costs for, quote, upgrading to the current federally certified versions of Sequoia products, unquote. But this is not required because of the move to fusion voting, but rather, according to Mr. Smith, is, quote, based on the intense scrutiny of elections, unquote, and would be recommended by the vendor with or without the switch to fusion voting. In an earlier memo, which I previously referenced, dated June 14, 2007, Mr. Smith explained that he, quote, did not anticipate that the technical fixes required by the implementation of fusion voting would require such a recertification to take place, since the version currently certified by the Oregon Secretary of State supports cross-endorsement, aka fusion voting. Both memos are attached to the study. The third cost to be considered is voter education. Based on the experience of states where fusion voting is legal and the opportunities provided by Oregon's vote-by-mail system, our study found that voter education costs can be kept to a minimum and still prevent voter confusion. As noted earlier and documented in our interviews with elected elections officials in the four fusion legal states, no expenditures were made to educate voters. Delaware's experience is particularly relevant to Oregon, as fusion had not been used there at all until recently. In all four states, no expenditures were made to educate voters, and those states still had very low rates of double votes and minimal contact from voters who were confused. Given the lack of confusion in other states with no voter education efforts expended, Oregon could likely do a good job of instructing voters on how fusion works through simple additions to the voter pamphlet and simple instructions on the ballot itself. To summarize, our research found the following. Fusion voting has not made elections more difficult or costly to administer. It has not caused confusion for voters. It is not a significant factor in contributing to the ballot clutter, since it does not determine the number of parties that appear on the ballot. And the cost that the state would incur in implementing this election reform, both the technical aspects as well as the voter education aspects, are one-time costs and need not be onerous. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. Andy, I'm glad you stayed up because I want to come back with you, and I can't tell from your letter. Was fusion voting in place when you became the clerk?
Yes.
Okay.
It's been used for decades.
Okay. All right. So that answers. And do you have, in terms of voter education, do you have sort of ongoing voter education projects that you use?
We had a major education process this year with the new voting system itself. We're going to the cover ballot to rapid scan. So in your case, you already have a direct mail, at least in my opinion, you have a direct mail already mailing the ballot out. When we do our absentee ballots, we do mail within that ballot any instructions that the voter would need for that particular election process.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you doing this. I think the question is, what is the next step in terms of this issue? As most of you know, we're heading into I think the Senate President calls it a supplemental session in February. I will definitely plan on hearing this bill. There are a couple things that I would really encourage supporters of the fusion voting process to do, and that is, as you see, Senator Farioli is not here today. We have gotten strong encouragement from leadership to make sure that as we're moving forward on legislation in this supplemental session, that it be very bipartisan. So I would really encourage you to speak with Senator Farioli or someone in the Senate Republican caucus, at least the staff there, probably Jonathan, 50%. Secondly, I know there's some folks in the audience that have some concerns about Oregon moving forward on this. I would specifically like to hear from the Secretary of State's office and the State Clerks Association, not today, of course, but when we have the hearing scheduled in February. I think that's critically important. We want to really try and narrow down what the cost implications would be, if any. So, anything else? All right. We really appreciate you all coming this afternoon. Thanks for your time and energy. And we're going to be adjourning the public information session, don't worry, on the fusion voting issue. So I'm going to adjourn that. And we're going to open a work session on a couple of LCs. You might stay tuned if you're at all interested in elections issues. Let's see. The chair would move LC-29 is a committee bill. The relating clause of the bill requires that out-of-state campaign contributions appear in different colored fonts than in-state campaign contributions on electronic filing system. Any discussion?
It's a good idea.
All right. Well, Senator Monis Anderson, your vote for introduction does not indicate your support or opposition to the concept, and there being no objection, so ordered. All right. I move that we introduce LC 30 as a committee bill, and before anyone in the audience panics or anyone listening to the tape, I want to make sure that everyone understands what this is a proposal to take a look at the indirect initiative system. It's the Washington model, for lack of a better word. I do believe that the City Club report suggested that we take a look at the indirect model at some point in the legislature. This actually is a redraft from some committee work in 1997. So it will be, I anticipate that the House and Senate Elections Committee will be having a joint hearing on this issue, on these concepts, in terms of changing the initiative system. But I suspect what you're going to see are public hearings only and not any work sessions. So, with that in mind, I would move we introduce LC 30 as a committee bill. Any discussion? And just a reminder, your vote for the introduction does not indicate support or opposition to the concept. Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much. Anything further to come before the committee?
Yeah.
We will see everyone in February. Thank you, Senator Monis Anderson, for hosting us. Thanks to the City of Gresham for their courtesy. Kimmer Bridges, Ron Papsdorf, wherever you are, thank you very much. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.